One of the great things about investing in multifamily is the long-term wealth creation. You buy a house, you fix it up, you flip it. If you did it right, you make a profit, you put it in the bank, but you're done. With rentals and apartments, you have money coming in every quarter for as long as you own that.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I'm Neil Timmons. I've got Andrew Cushman here. He's got a fun story. He used to be a chemical engineer. He left that field and decided to get into fixing and flipping. That turned into really more hard work, more work chasing dollars through effort. And so he left that, ventured his way into multifamily, and that's where he found tremendous success in being involved now in over 2,600 units. So we're going to talk about that journey through the process here. Andrew, how are you?
Doing well, Neil. Good to be here.
I'm excited you're here. Thanks so much for taking the time. Hey, tell me, we all have a different entry point. What was your first investment?
In terms of real estate, it was actually the condo that I purchased for myself to live in here in Southern California. Anyone who's heard Bigger Pockets is probably familiar with the term house hacking.
Sure.
And so when I moved out here, I actually just rented a room from a guy who had just bought a condo.
Yeah.
And after a few years, I was like, well, this is a good idea. So I bought a unit two doors down in the same building. That was our primary residence. And then I guess 3, 4, 5 years later, that's when we moved into the flipping business. And so I don't count the flips as investments, but our first like true investment was a mostly vacant 92 unit apartment complex out in Macon, Georgia on the other side of the country. So
what year was that?
2011 was the first apartment complex.
First apartment. So how did you even get involved with apartments? And then the next question is, how did you get involved with apartments across the country?
So how we got involved with apartments was the flipping was going great. 2009, 2010 were fantastic years financially, but you know, we kind of came to my wife's my business partner, we came to the conclusion like, okay, this is kind of like another job, right? Yeah. And we're only as good as the last flip. Once you sell it, there's nothing left.
Yep.
And everyone else was starting to figure out that it was a good place to be too.
Yes.
And so we said, well, hey, you know what? Everyone just got foreclosed on, which means they either can't buy a house or they're scared to buy a house. So they're going to go rent.
Yep.
And we just had a huge recession, which probably means we're going to have a long expansion. So I put those two things together and rentals should do well. So let's do apartments. And we had a mentor that we learned the single family flipping business from. And we asked him, hey, do you know anybody that we could learn apartments from? He's like, actually, I do. And he connected us with a guy who'd done 800 units. We hired him as a mentor to hold our hand for, you know, the first year. And in terms of Macon, Georgia, we basically said, you know, I live in California, and one of the most common questions I get is like, oh man, how can you live in California? Well, my philosophy is live where you enjoy living and invest where the returns are the best, right?
Yeah.
So I enjoy surfing and skiing and all the other things you can do in California, but we can get the best returns with the lowest amount of risk in the Southeast US. And there's other places in the country too, but for us, we chose the Southeast, kind of Atlanta as a hub. I can get there in 4.5 hours on a direct flight.
Yep.
And then anything within maybe a 6 or 8 hour drive over there. But the main thing about that chunk of the country is even back then, and even more so today, that's where everybody's moving.
Yeah.
So population growth is strong, wages are going up there, you know, there's a housing shortage, it's a business friendly environment. And so we just started looking in Georgia and came across a property in Macon. I wouldn't buy in Macon today, but back then we didn't have the clear criteria that we have now.
Yeah.
And I think we got the deal because the broker saw a sucker from a mile away and said, oh, we'll get these guys, will take it off my hands. We did, but it turned out well. We learned a lot. And like you mentioned, there's been a couple thousand units since. So far, so good.
Yeah. What was the biggest challenge and what came up? What did you meet along the way, the learning curve from going from fix and flip to that first unit?
There's a lot. One, and I would say the environment today in multifamily is shifting kind of back toward where it was then. We're a long ways off from there, but I'm starting to see some things go back in that direction. So anyone who's tried to buy multifamily in the last 5 or 6 years knows it's been incredibly competitive. Well, part of the reason for that, it's been very easy to raise money the last 5 or 6
Correct.
Years because everyone's excited about real estate. In 2011, everyone was terrified of real estate.
Right.
So that was one of the things is we were like, oh, well, cool. This first deal, we quote unquote only need to raise $1.2 million. Well, that we thought, well, that should be fairly easy. I mean, we don't have it, but that's why you syndicate. And, you know, we've got investors on our flips and all that kind of stuff. Yep. We underestimated how hard it was going to be to raise $1.2 million in 2011 with our limited network. It took us 6 months to do it. The deal almost blew up in our face because we had to keep extending. And we would have, if the deal fell apart, we would have personally lost six figures because of deposits and expenses and third-party reports and all that. So it was a very, that 6 month period is a big part of why I'm, you know, started going gray early.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of the challenges, is underestimating how hard it would be to raise money in that time period. And which, again, I think investor mentality is starting to shift back a little bit. As I talk to investors, you know, everyone's getting a little scared when they see their 401k down 25%.
Correct.
So I think it's going to get a little harder going forward, even though I still think real estate is the best place to be. So that was one. And then, you know, we underestimated the renovation on that property. It was very old, tons of deferred maintenance. And yeah, there's a lot. I wouldn't recommend someone doing a difficult Class C as their first property.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes. But first, a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place, batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batchleads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month.
Yeah, yeah. How has your buy box shifted over the years?
It has shifted to, we effectively, our core property is built between 1990 and 2010 in roughly around 200 units, right? And most people probably listening on, well, I'm not looking for 200 units. Well, that, you don't need to look for 200 units. That's, we do that because we find there's a peak of efficiency of scale there. Mm-hmm. But if I was out looking for a 5 unit or a 10 unit or a 200 unit, our parameters have shifted that we only buy in fairly high median income areas so that our rents are very affordable to the vast majority of people there. Has to be low crime, not in flood zones, has to have above average population growth, and a handful of other factors, and then Class B to Class A. And the reasons for that is when we looked back at our portfolio over the years, we realized that the Class B stuff, we made just as much, if not more money, with a small fraction of the headache and the difficulty of managing it. And then what we also found, it's easier for investors to see themselves investing in a cleaner, nicer looking property than one that looks scary and makes you think you should carry a gun if you're going to go, you know, if you're going to go visit. Also, and I think this is really important going forward, over the last 10 years, we've seen cap rates compress significantly. Yeah, and, right. You know, no investor left behind. Cap rate, that's basically how you kind of, the metric that the market uses to value the income stream off of a property. And typically, historically, you know, an A-class property is lower risk and maybe it trades at a 4% cap rate. And C-class is higher risk, so it trades at 8%. And so you're getting a higher return in theory for taking on the greater risk. Yep. Well, what's happened the last few years, they've all just been trading at 4 caps, like no spread or anything like that. And what we're just starting to see the very beginning of, and this applies again, whether you're looking at 6 units or 600, is in those C-class properties, the cap rates are starting to head back towards their normal differentiation from B and C. The reason being is with gas doubling, food going up, the people who live in those units often have no room in their budget. And so they have to drive to work. They have to eat.
That's right.
So that means they're having more trouble paying rent now. And so therefore, delinquency goes up, bad debt goes up, the risk of owning those properties goes up, and now the cap rate goes up, in addition to debt getting more expensive. So we started avoiding C-class about 5 years ago, and we're very much avoiding it now, because that's, I think we're going to see the biggest risk over the next couple of years.
Yeah. It's there's kind of that sweet spot, as I talk to investors who engage at the level you do, that B class is really the sweet spot, somewhere from, you know, B minus to B plus, but in the B's.
Definitely. And that applies, again, even if you can buy a six unit, that's sure. a B plus.
That's right.
Yeah. And if I was a smaller investor trying to get in and in that size range, that's exactly what I would do. I'd go find a 10 unit in a B plus area or something along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah. What's been surprising about being in this space versus being in the fix and flip space, or let's just call it single family space? What has allowed you to really fall in love with this that maybe you didn't give much thought to or didn't know about until you got into the biz?
I get to interact with a whole lot more people and have much more long-term relationships. Fix and flip was, you know, find a seller, buy the house, fix it up, list it, boom, done, never talk to them again. Now, you know, we've got relationships with sellers and brokers and lenders that have been going on for over a decade.
Yeah.
Also, we've made a really concerted effort to network with other people who do what we do. And, you know, part of some masterminds and just organically. And that's a huge improvement that we didn't have when we were doing flipping. But also, one of the great things about doing multifamily and investing in multifamily, either actively or passively, is the long-term wealth creation, right? Like I said, you buy a house, you fix it up, you flip it, maybe you make a check, you know, you get it. You hopefully, if you did it right, you make a profit, you put it right in the bank, but you're done. Like if you with rentals and apartments, if you're operating them right and you bought it right and you financed it right, you have money coming in every quarter for as long as you own that. And in the meantime, it's, you know, paying down the loan, you're taking right. depreciation, it's probably appreciating. And you're providing good, clean, safe housing for residents and for a community. So there's a lot more, I found a lot more satisfaction in doing apartment complexes because you can affect 200 families at once versus one or even five or 10. And again, also that kind of the, we call, you know, not, it's not truly passive income unless you're an LP and a limited partner yep. investor, but what I like to call horizontal income, right? You're still kind of working for it as an asset manager or a sponsor or whatever, but you can count on it coming in. Like, you know, hey, okay, this right. 10 unit is going to provide X amount of income for me every quarter. And what that does, not only does it give you peace of mind and eventually financial freedom, but it gives you the ability to only do deals because you should, not just because you can, right? People who do bad deals or do deals that they shouldn't, it's often because they feel financial pressure.
Yeah.
Like, I got to do another deal, otherwise I can't pay the bills.
Right.
Well, when you have income coming in from long-term holds, you can be in a position of, hey, you know, I'm only going to do deals that are really good deals.
Right.
Instead of, well, I got to do three this year or I can't make payroll.
Or right. I can't make payroll. Or my contractor who I've committed to, he's going to leave.
Yeah, well, that too.
Then I got to start over.
Yeah, keeping staff. I mean, there's a lot of different aspects
right.
of that.
Yep, you're exactly right. Speaking of staff, tell me what your structure, what your core team looks like.
My core team for way too many years was my wife and I.
Yeah.
That was one big mistake I made. So the two biggest mistakes I made was one, not shifting into the B-class stuff earlier, and two, not bringing more people on my team earlier. For the longest time, my wife and I were really solopreneurs, right? It was really just us kind of doing everything. And then we did bring in an admin person fairly early, but truthfully, could have done a lot more if we'd brought a lot more people on. So our team today, we have a full-time person who focuses on asset management. We have a full-time person who focuses on acquisitions. We still have that admin person. And then actually, we just made two hires. They're going to be starting in about a month. We're adding a full-time analyst to work on the acquisition side so that we can hunt through even more deals. And then we're bringing on a full-time investor relations person. That'll, again, should probably start in about a month. Yeah. And then hopefully first quarter of next year is another asset management person. That's our core team. Pretty much everybody else is third party. So we use third party management. We've partnered with the same company for over a decade now. And so we've got a very strong, tight partnership and relationship there. So the people that I just went through, we also have a virtual assistant in the Philippines. And she does a phenomenal job. So.
Yeah. What's your culture like?
We are very much lifestyle business, meaning we internally, our accountability is not how long your butt was in a chair. It's how good of a job did you do? Yeah. Did you honor your commitments? Does your yes mean yes and your no mean no? Did you serve our customers and clients, which we have two sets. We have our investors and we have our residents. And we very much strive for a culture of transparency, accountability, and, you know, everybody, you know, everyone has their role, but, you know, we want a culture of anyone can step in and help out if necessary. So.
Yeah. No, that's terrific. Where, talk to me about next year, what the balance of this year looks like, and what's next year look like? Where are you guys headed?
I believe that the current turmoil is actually going to lead to opportunities. Mm. You know, I mean, ask any real estate investor, you know, what's their biggest problem in the last 5 or 6 years? Oh, I can't find any deals, right?
Can't find any deals.
Well, guess what? When deals get ready to come up, that's when everyone starts, you know, runs away and says, oh, I'm not going to buy it. It's too scary, right?
Yeah.
Well, so is it possible? You know, some people say, well, Andrew, what if prices come down? Okay, well, what if they do? If you buy the right piece of real estate in the right location, and we already talked about kind of what that right piece is, and location is growing, right? You know, incomes, correct, population, all that. If you look longer term and hold that 5, 7, 10 years, I almost guarantee it's gonna be worth more than it is today just from inflation. But that doesn't factor in the real key, which is your ability to operate it well. Because the beauty of commercial real estate and apartments is the value is determined, yes, by cap rates and market forces, but the number one thing is the net operating income. And that's something you control, right? The value of a single family house purely on comps, right? Right. You know, well, what did the
what did your neighbors sell for?
Yeah, what did the neighbors sell for? Your apartment complex, in some sense, not fully, but in some sense, it doesn't matter what the neighbors sold for,
right,
because the investors are buying the income stream and you have control over that.
Right.
So that's a big one. And with the cost of debt going up, again, you know, some of the lenders are starting to back off a little bit nowadays. So could prices come down in some markets in the next 1 to 2 years? Yes, they possibly could. So if you're, you know, I definitely would not buy something today and plan on getting out in 2 years. That, right, that might not work, right?
Right.
But if you're looking longer term, which really everyone should be, because that real estate is a get rich over time,
that's right,
business, then the opportunities are coming. And I'll give an example of that. In 2021, 70% of all large multifamily, I don't know the percentage for the small stuff, but I would imagine it's similar. 70% of all multifamily transactions were done with bridge loans. And most of those at 75 to 80% leverage. So, okay, well, big deal, Andrew. What does that mean? Well, those loans come due in 2 to 3 years. That means in 2023 and 2024, all those loans are due with a balloon payment, and the property has to be refinanced or sold. Well, again, most of them were done at 75 to 80% leverage. And if interest rates are still high, that means that those loans will not be refinanceable because there won't be enough debt. So lenders look at debt coverage ratio, right? Like, is there enough income divided?
How much income do you have coming in compared to how much debt you have going on?
Right. And if that ratio is not high enough, they won't refinance it, right? So there is the possibility, if rates stay high enough into 2023 and 24, that there's going to be some motivated sellers on some nice properties because the properties are doing fine, but the debt markets are messing up their business plan. And I could see that being a significant opportunity to add some really nice properties to your portfolio over the next 2 years. And then once that's cleared out, you know, again, I think it's going to be, you know, off to the races again, because we have a severe shortage of housing, both single and multifamily. So does that mean buy willy-nilly? No, absolutely not. You really got to be careful, especially with how you structure your debt, but opportunities are coming.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. I've got a question for you. Are you enjoying the podcast? I sure hope you are. And if you are, may I ask you a personal favor? Would you mind going to iTunes and leaving a written review and a 5-star review? If you do that, send me a screenshot to my office. I want to send you back a list as a thank you. It's a list of the top 20 best lists to market to in order to find motivated sellers. This list has been curated by my office over years of direct marketing to sellers. This will either shortcut your path to finding the best list to start marketing to, or it's sure to add to what's already working. You can send that screenshot of your review to marketing@realgritpodcast.com. That's marketing@realgritpodcast.com. Yeah, let's put some numbers around that. So say somebody financed it with a bridge loan. They're at 4.5% at a year ago. And 3 years rolls by. They go off to put it on a perm loan to refinance the things out. And they're at 6.5 or 7.5%, whatever the current market is. Once they start putting the debt service ratio in place, it's going to be way out of whack. They're going to have to end up bringing money. Like you said, you can't just refinance it. They're going to have to bring equity to even keep the property in a refinance basis, or they've got to sell it. And that means at a price lower than what they paid for it a year ago.
Yeah, possibly. And so, and there's going to be sponsors. You're like, fine, you know, we'll just add some capital and we'll hold on. And that's those right. guys will be fine.
Yep.
It's the ones who are thin and took the highest leverage and don't have big reserves. Those are the ones that are going to probably be forced to sell some properties at inopportune times and potentially inopportune terms. Mm-hmm. And those who are preparing now will be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, benefit. Could create some tremendous opportunities. Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
So your favorite quote, let your yes be yes and your no be a no.
Yep.
Jesus said it. What about that resonates most with you?
It goes into integrity and reliability. And, you know, you've also heard before that how you handle the small things is typically how you handle the big things.
Yeah.
So I'll give a perfect example. If you're trying to get into the multifamily space and you're trying to build relationships with brokers and someone sends you a deal and you're like, hey, thanks for sending this to me. I'll call you on Wednesday to follow up. Call them on Wednesday. Right. Don't wait to call them on Thursday or forget about or do that. Because if you show that you're reliable and consistent and have integrity on little things like that, you know, just, I said, yes, I'll call you on Wednesday. Then that shows that you're trustworthy and reliable on the bigger things. I just think that yes and your no be no, it just applies in business and life across the board from the smallest to the biggest things. So,
what do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
Ooh, that's, we could do a whole nother podcast on that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think for one, I think it, I mean, it's different for every person. So for me personally, my limiting belief of, oh, I can't afford to hire people. I saw it as an expense rather than the investment that it is.
Right.
And when we brought on the two people we brought on 3 years ago, that took my business up to a whole nother level. I wish I'd done it sooner. So, you know, if you're someone who's like, well, you know, I'm trying to get my first multifamily, I can't hire anyone. All right. Hire a virtual assistant part-time, get an admin for 10 hours a week, share an admin with somebody, right? If the right person in the right role is a huge lever to improving your business, and it gives you colleagues, someone to talk to and commiserate with.
So. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
Well, I mentioned live where you like to live and invest where the returns are best. I love surfing and backcountry skiing, which is why I live here in California. I was out surfing yesterday morning. That board behind me is not a prop.
Nope.
And I love the outdoors and just, you know, being out in nature and doing those things. So learned to surf and ski from my parents and keeping that up.
What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
You know, so we donate to my wife and I donate to a handful of charities, but one of my favorite ones, it's actually called Von and On, V-O-N ampersand O-N. Mm. And it's a small group. What they do is they go down and minister to people in Tijuana and they bring them food and supplies for school, medicine. Like there's this 10-year-old kid who's got diabetes and, you know, the family can't afford the insulin. So through Von and On, they'll make sure he gets his insulin every, you know, his month that he needs every day or whatever it is for him personally. But, you know, I just look at that as, you know, I live just really just not even 2 hours across the border in Southern California, one of the wealthiest areas on the planet effectively. And there is no reason that I couldn't have been born 2 hours away on the other side of the border in a ghetto in Tijuana.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of speaks to me to help those who didn't draw as good of a card as I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for those who want to connect with you, they want to learn about you, they want to learn what you do, or they want to, perhaps there's some passive investment opportunities, what you do, how can they connect?
If you Google my name or Vantage Point Acquisitions, all kinds of stuff will come up. So the website is short for Vantage Point Acquisitions. It's vpacq.com. There's a handful of tabs on there for how to get in touch with us or see what we're up to. That's probably the best way. Connect on LinkedIn as well. But if you actually want to have a conversation, do it through the website because I find LinkedIn messages to be 99% spam. So I don't respond to them.
Spam or recruiters, I suspect, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that a whole bunch. No, great. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to connect up here. It's a fun story to talk about, you know, how you first left a job in the real world, if you will, to navigate your way into fixing and flipping and then make a business decision to invest in something that, you know, you can get paid now and you get paid forever, as long as you effectively hold the property, right? And manage it correctly. So
absolutely,
it's a wonderful story. So I sincerely appreciate you taking the time to connect here and talk us through things.
Oh, well, thanks, Neil. It was good talking with you.
Likewise. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time.
If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.